23 federal MPs and senators have been scrambling over the last 24 hours, furiously checking their citizenship status. It's the story we kicked off with yesterday, the breaking news, the Greens red-faced over dual resignations. Yesterday, it was Queensland Canadian, Larissa Waters. Last week, it was WA Kiwi, Scott Ludlam. Well, One Nation Senator Malcolm Roberts, too, he's waded into this because he was born in India. And he's confirmed his citizenship is in order via Twitter. He wrote, on another note, I do not own, nor have I ever owned a 7-Eleven, and I'm not even a chucker. Hashtag not Indian. So there we go, Malcolm Roberts all in order there. Now, The Australian is reporting 19 of the 23 MPs. They've confirmed with them that they're all good too. But the big issue out of all this, what is the issue with being a dual international? From what I can ascertain, from what I've seen, and maybe you can tell me differently, but we've looked at a number of jobs, a number of vocations, a number of careers, and it seems there is no other job in the country that rules you out if you hold dual citizenship. I've even checked with ASIO and Defence. I thought I'd start there because you'd think they'd be one straight away that, okay, we could have some problems. But they state that you must be an Australian citizen, which is the case if you're a dual citizen. Nothing about precluding you as a dual citizen if you're a dual national. Judges, so someone sits on the bench. Magistrates, no, fine. Police, fine. Teachers, fine. Bankers, mechanics, bakers, butchers, all fine. State politicians, it's okay to hold dual citizenship. Let's have a look at the numbers here. Almost 29% of us, so cracking onto a third of Australians. 7 million Aussies were born overseas. We are the biggest multicultural nation on the planet. Is it time to change the rules? You may have a thought on this. 131873, Ben at 4bc.com.au. One man who does definitely have a thought on, and he knows this inside and out. He's Professor George Williams. He's the Dean of Law at the University of New South Wales. He is one of this country's leading constitutional experts. Professor, afternoon. The Constitution rules out dual citizens becoming members of federal parliament. What's the problem with being a dual national?
Well, the idea is that if you go back to 1901, when this was drafted, that you should only be a British subject at that point. We didn't even have Australian citizenship. And it was thought that that should be it, and that you shouldn't have any other allegiance to any other country. And back then it made sense, because not many people had dual citizenship. Of course, communications were difficult, and we had a common citizenship with New Zealand, Canada, and a range of Commonwealth countries. Today, everything's changed. It's very common for people to be born overseas. We're a migrant nation, and so we have a provision that was designed more than 100 years ago that's just a really bad fit for the sort of community we have today.
Right, well, the question begs, do we need to change the Constitution, amend the Constitution? I know that's a hell of a big deal, but do you think it's time?
Well, I think it is, and it matters who represents us in Parliament. And the last thing we need is the chaos that comes from people losing their seat, including for things where they're given rights they weren't even aware of. And, of course, the way this works is that you can be disqualified because another country counts you as its citizen, even if you weren't even aware that the law worked in that way, and that's what happened to Larissa Waters. In this case, we have a provision that Parliament itself knows is flawed. It had reports in the 1980s, the 1990s, and on both occasions they said this does need to be fixed, but they just didn't get around to it, and we're paying the price today of the inaction of those parliamentarians.
Amending a constitution, that's a referendum, isn't it?
It is, and it's something that doesn't need to be gone into lightly, but for this sort of change, it's a mechanical change, an updating change. It's something that's had support across the parties. It's something also that it's about modernising that provision. It should be done in a simple way at an election. You don't need a big separate referendum day. You just need to bring forward this, and there may be other similar changes of this kind that can be brought forward without too much fuss, and that's typically how other countries deal with this. For some reason in Australia, we make a much bigger deal of this than we need to, and as a result, we don't get around to fixing things that otherwise sit there and cause problems.
So you can have dual citizenship and sit in state parliament, but not federal.
Well, this rule is just a national rule, and it's because it's fixed and required the referendum, it hasn't been changed. But, of course, in this day and age, it's very common that people are dual citizens. And for a country like Australia, where we're trying to do business in Asia or around the world, It's often a big advantage to employ people who've got those connections, that recognition in another country. We do want parliamentarians deciding on our behalf, but dual citizenship is not the sort of thing it was in 1901. Today it's quite common, and in fact, if we apply it rigorously, as is required by this provision, we're knocking out millions of Australians from ever representing us in Parliament.
All right, let's have a look at the flip side, though. Do we want someone representing us that may have a foot in another camp?
Yeah, look, it's a good question, and I think in this day and age we do accept that people can be born overseas, they might come to this country and have that other citizenship, but that entitles them to travel documents and other things. But it doesn't mean that they have to decide on behalf of that country, and it can be the case they don't even know that they've got those rights anyway. I think the key thing is you must be an Australian citizen. You've got to take that oath when you go into Parliament that says that you will act on behalf of the Australian people. And I think those two things are what you need. You don't need this additional disqualification, which, as I say, is a poor fit for today.
My guest this afternoon is Professor George Williams. He's the Dean of Law at the University of New South Wales, again, one of this country's leading constitutional experts. Professor, everyone's wondering, and I'm in this camp as well, why the Electoral Commission doesn't do a background check? Where in the system is the checks and balances on this? Does the law need to be changed to at least give someone, somewhere, the authority to check the form that those applying for federal parliament submit?
Well, the problem is it's too complicated and we don't know the answer a lot of the time. These rules aren't clear rules. They're vague. There's a lot of grey areas. And as we find with Larissa Waters, you can actually be knocked out in cases where you had no idea that you had that sort of connection. It's also true that this...
Surely, Professor, though, and sorry to interrupt, but I mean, if you fill out forms for government all the time, country of birth, you write down whatever that may be, it's outside Australia.
Yep.
Surely someone can just phone another country within a government department and say, hello, we're just doing a background check. Does this person hold citizenship of your country?
And often the other country will not answer the question because they don't keep records. It can also be the case, it's the case here that the answer is determined by the law of that other country, which changes frequently. So it may be a person is a citizen at one point but not another. Other countries refuse to give out that information because they see it as a state secret. Some other countries won't let you revoke the citizenship of that other country. And in some other countries, again, their records are in very poor order. So if you made the call, perhaps you'd get the wrong information. And that's why there's no certain path, because it depends upon the quality of information from the other country, which can change, can be uncertain, and it's not a good basis for really knowing the answer, and could actually be quite expensive to try and track this down as well.
But if it changes, surely that phone call, or surely that process of finding that out from one country to another, one government to another, that can be easily ruled out. If you say the circumstances changed, right, the application's made on the 1st of January this date, are you a citizen of this country? No. I'm just trying to see where in government, where there are so many checks and balances, in fact, in everyday life, where there's so many checks and balances, I submit a form to come to your university, you're doing background checks on me, you're making sure that I am who I am and I have the qualifications that I say I do. And if I don't, that application's rejected. It just seems to me here that somewhere in a system such as applying for federal parliament, a very basic system is not in place to check to see who people say they are, who they claim they are.
Yeah, look, I think it's a good point. Look, I wish it were possible to do it. It would make sense. But look, the insurmountable obstacle a lot of the time is that other countries don't have a record of their own citizens. So you can make the inquiry and they won't give you an answer. What they'll do is they'll say you need independent legal advice. The person needs to work it out for themselves and they'll need to trawl through the law of that other country.
And that's the system we've got now. It's up to the candidate, and we've seen what's just happened in the last few days, that system is flawed. Should the Electoral Commission be given some sort of powers of background checks, regardless if it's citizenship or otherwise?
Look, I think it would be unwise because I think you'd be involving them in a tough area, because often it's not even a matter of knowing the answer, it's a risk analysis that you find out that maybe this person is, maybe they're not. And it's not just this area, it's also the area where people are barred and disqualified if they hold an office of profit, so a public servant position. There's a lot of those that we just don't know the answer to. So someone may or may not be disqualified if they're a local government councillor, may or may not be if they work at a university. So if the Electoral Commission looked at that, they'd have to say, we actually don't know the answer. This old provision of the Constitution hasn't yet been tested for those things in the High Court. So they'd say maybe 60-40 for some of these. And again, it's hardly a satisfactory basis for working out whether someone can be a member of our Parliament.
All right, Professor, one final one. Now, the two pieces of correspondence I'm seeing the most with the themes in here are saying, well, hang on, these two, the two Green senators, they should, one, repay the salary they've been receiving in the time that they were in office. But the one I want to ask you about, and this is probably your expertise, what about legislation passed with their votes? If they're ineligible to be sitting in Parliament, does that legislation still count? Is it still legitimate?
Look, and firstly, there's no doubt the Greens' procedures have been sloppy. More rigour was needed, and the major parties do tend to put more rigour into this. I don't think, though, they will or should be asked to repay the money. They've done the job for this period of time. And in fact, none of those earlier laws can be overturned. You can't revisit these things. And imagine if you did, that it would be chaos. Laws might have been passed that provide for criminal sanctions. People could be let out of jail. Mm. Businesses could have transactions undone. And in fact, if you think even to the last election, the whole voting system was based upon a model that was an agreement between the Coalition and the Greens. Does that mean the whole Senate voting system is out the window?
Well, Professor, this is exactly my point. Is there someone, let me rephrase that, could someone challenge any of the legislation passed deeming it ineligible because of those who are passing that legislation, whatever it may be?
You could challenge, but you'd lose. And that's because the High Court doesn't reopen past events of this kind. And it takes a pretty pragmatic approach. And you look forward from this point, but I can't see there's any grounds to look again at even very close votes that have depended upon the votes of these Greens disqualified members.
All right, good stuff. Thanks for letting us pick your brains, Professor.
My pleasure.
George Williams, the Dean of Law at the University of New South Wales. More importantly, though, he is one of the country's leading experts on the Constitution. 35 publications, 35 different books he's published on this, so he knows it inside and out. He says it is time for a change. Section 44, it needs a revamp. It's not 1901 anymore, 2017. Do you agree?